This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
This is The Morning Run with Shazana, Philip and Chuang. The COVID-19 pandemic has pushed more people to tap into gig work as a means of supplementing their income or even as the main source of income. Some estimates put the number of Malaysian gig workers at around 4 to 5 million people.
While gig workers are often synonymous with delivery riders or e-hailing drivers, the gig economy isn't limited to just these occupations. It also includes part-timers, freelancers, independent contractors and project-based work. Essentially, anyone who makes a living by taking an on-demand job. Now, as more Malaysians rely on gig work as the primary source of livelihood, it raises the question of whether the legal framework and labour rights protections extend to those in the gig economy.
Yeah, there's also been calls by some quarters, including the Penang Malaysian Trades Union Congress and UMNO Youth, for the Employment Act 1955 to be amended to reflect the new norms of gig work. So, of course, the question is what kind of legal reform should be considered if we're really truly serious about strengthening labour rights for gig workers?
So joining us on the line for some thoughts on this is Tan Zeigen, Research Manager at the Asia School of Business. Good morning, Zeigen. Thanks for speaking with us. So let's start with understanding of how the picture is now. What kind of protections do gig workers in Malaysia currently have? And does this differ depending on the kind of gig work that's being done?
Hi, thanks everyone. So in terms of some of the protections, right, you know, that we currently have, I think in the last few years, especially thanks to the pandemic, there have been major reforms in this. So we do have, for example, SOCSO having their injury protection scheme, and also EPF, where all of this is done on a voluntary basis, contribution basis from the workers to get some of this. So SOCSO injury insurance, EPF, it's a sort of the retirement fund. This does not differ between what type of gig workers they are, right? So they're all categorized under self-employed workers.
Would recognizing gig workers as employees be a fix-all solution? What would this classification solve? And what gaps would still remain for gig workers?
Yeah, so to me, I think the recognizing them all as, employees is not a fix-all solution. So maybe to take a step back and say, right, you know, what is the core of getting this protection to these workers? So the protections are, for example, right, workplace injury protection, sort of insurance and so on. So that's all under your Social Protection Act. And then it comes down to things like, you know, representation when there's a dispute and so on. And that comes under the Employment Act. However, without any change in the sort of Employment Act right now, recognizing all these gig workers as, you know, employees may provide some of these protections, such as representation in the workplace. But then the downside is that there'll be a lack of flexibility, right? Because in the Act, it also does have things such as, you know, or in terms of, you know, serving notice, like, you know, job security and so on. But this will not suit the gig workers who, you know, maybe doing this work ad hoc, such as, you know, mothers who may not be able to commit to a full-time job, even a fixed part-time job, because, you know, there's a heavy care burden, but yet still need that supplementary work. So if, you know, we recognize gig workers as with the Employment Act right now, we actually limit, you know, the kind of jobs that this other folks who are usually, you know, out of the workforce to be able to participate in some work. Yeah.
So how do we balance between giving gig workers some form of protection without deterring this form of employment due to rising costs then?
Yeah. So I think the first thing that needs to be done is actually to think in terms of categorization of these workers, right? There are a lot of cases of miscategorization, right? Some workers who are named as formal employees miscategorized by employers, right, as a gig worker, therefore not according them the kind of protection that they need. So, but at the same time, right, gig work itself is quite heterogeneous, right? You know, what kind of gig work may mean, you know, different lifestyles and also different needs of these different workers. So the first part is to really do, you know, a work and try to understand, right, you know, what these gig workers need and who they are, right? And then this has been done, right, in different countries, I think such as the UK, they are looking at, right, okay, you know, how do we think about work? So it's no longer employer, employee, that's sort of categorization, but a bit more. So that's in the first place. After we understand, right, the different types of needs, and that's where we can think about how to balance, right, between the flexibility given in the job and also the kind of protection. But I think in the first place, though, we must in my sense, that social protection must be given to all workers. Social protection in terms of workplace injury, in terms of, you know, EPF, in terms of, you know, retirement fund, that should be given to all in the first place.
But this is very fascinating because it's an issue of categorization. And you say, right, the mobility between the categorization is so fluid. I could have started doing this as a hobby and then realized because I lost my job, I then put in more hours and then becomes more of a full-time perspective, right? So then my question is, with respect to the protections we afford, is this currently enough? And how does it scale up and down based on your level of commitment?
Yeah, so I think to talk about, and so let's talk, you know, protection comes in many forms, sure, as I've discussed. So if you look at in terms of the workplace injury, right, in terms of EPF, we do have it there. Mm. Yes, the burden of paying for this contribution is still on the workers themselves. There will be a need, right, to think about how to get our private sector, right, you know, the employers, right, so to speak, and also the government using their fiscal power to help support, you know, these workers. So that's in the first place. But for the other sort of, you know, things like representation and so on, yeah, that is the part that we need to think deeper. This may include things that perhaps, and I think this has been spoken about in the parliament, I think, last year, in terms of a self-employed workers act in itself. So, but then a lot of thinking needs to come behind it, right, to say that, okay, how do we properly support them? And as you said, right, in a life cycle, we will change, right, the kind of the way we work because of just life circumstances and so on. So therefore, we need to think of these different acts that needs to protect, you know, workers of, you know, in different life cycles.
That's an interesting point that you make there, Zaygen, that perhaps we should be looking at a separate law entirely for the self-employed in order to ensure that adequate protections are given. I mean, as we're discussing this modern labour landscape, do you have other recommendations on how the Employment Act or any other law can be updated to account for these changes?
Yeah, so I think in terms of the Employment Act itself, I think what we have right now protects the vast majority of the workers, which are our former employment, right? So I think that part, many parts of it should be kept there. It should be updated, right? And I think it is done because I think there is always discussion between the labor union, the government, and the private sector on that, right? But instead, I think as I mentioned, we should think about perhaps you can amend the Employment Act if that's feasible, with the caveats or sections that talk about self-employed or have a self-employed act in itself. And I think that is what we need right now, to recognize that the labor landscape has changed, where employment is no longer just employee and employer and so on, but there should be more categories. And with that, more categories means there should be a need for more legislation and so on to protect those.
Right. I think a broader definition to what we define as work. But I want to just get your perspective. In addition to that separate legislation, if you look ahead to budget 2022 next week, right, what would you like to see that would strengthen gig worker protection then?
So I think if you look at the budget 2022 in the short term, right, the first thing that we need is really more greater fiscal support, right, for institutions that have been safeguarding our social protection schemes, such as PERCASO and KWSP, right? I think they are the ones that have been supporting workers who are, you know, out of jobs, you know, increasingly our gig workers, but the kind of funds that they have will be limited, and therefore there should be greater fiscal support, right, for this organization to do their work, right? And then beyond that, I think in terms of laws and so on, that I think is a much longer term discussion. But for budget 2022, I think that would be the first thing I would talk about.
All right, Zaygen, thanks so much for speaking to us. That was Tan Zaygen, Research Manager at the Asia School of Business, speaking to us about how protections for gig workers could be better improved, essentially.
Yeah, and I think he's saying it's just not really accurate to put it all and lumped it under the Employment Act, because I think the definition of work is so broad. We tend to associate gig workers with like the tech platforms like Grab, but it's just much more than that.
It is really broad, actually.
Yeah, and so the solutions tend to be very famous about, oh, what is Grab going to do, or what is Foodpanda? But no, I think that's just not the full solution, essentially.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.